Welcome back to Horse Talks. Dr. Yardley here, co-host Dr. Rice. Dr. Rice, how has this week been?
It's been good.
Yeah, you had any cases of arthritis that you had to deal with in your daily functions as a doctor?
We did. We saw a horse that came in for what was suspected to be a right forelimb lameness that had been going on for about 3 months.
That's a long time.
It's a long time. You know, they had recently purchased the horse about 5 months ago.
So I think this story's going to go poorly.
So for the majority of the time the owners had it,
it's been lame.
It's been lame.
Ooh.
And the hope was that this horse is going to be used for barrel racing.
Oh, no. So, let me pull up these x-rays of this horse. How did you diagnose it?
Sort of like we talked about in the last episode.
Yes.
Uh-huh. We did our full lameness exam. We did our full palpation.
Yes.
And right off the bat, we could see, just looking at the horse, that the contour of the carpus, the knee.
Yeah, I can see it on the x-ray. It's not it's not pretty.
It was okay. Not normal.
Not
that
normal.
Was on the left front.
On the left front, but it came in for
a right
front
lameness.
Okay.
So.
Always confusing.
Always confusing.
Mm-hmm.
We watched the horse go.
Yeah.
We did some flexion tests. Flexing the carpus made the horse crippled.
Left front or right front?
Left front.
Okay. What about the right front?
Nothing right front.
Nothing right front.
Yes.
Okay. Do you think it was just a miscommunication or?
I think so. I think it can be sometimes a little bit confusing if you're not super familiar with lameness to know exactly which leg it is.
Yeah. Lame. I mean, that's why we want them to come see a veterinarian.
Yeah.
3 months, 4 months. Looking at this x-ray, it looks like it's been going on for some time now.
Some time now, yeah. We took some x-rays of the carpus, and as we are looking at right now, there's pretty significant osteoarthritis in the middle carpal joint.
Yeah, that's significant.
Significant.
That looks like an old horse knee, like an old quarter horse. Was this horse old?
Older, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's unfortunate for this horse's athletic performance.
It is, and we unfortunately didn't give her a great prognosis for athletic soundness. But, you know, she wanted to try something.
Yep.
And so we talked about some of the different options that we have for relieving some of the pain associated with osteoarthritis.
Which is going to be the topic of today's podcast.
Wow,
how real life ties in so well. A couple of questions about this case. The horse was sound when they bought it, we think?
That's what they said.
Okay.
Yeah, so whether the horse had been on some medications or recently indulged.
Yeah, that is. And during a pre-purchase exam, you would clearly see this and x-ray the area. A lot of times, I always ask the clients, they want to do drug testing.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, the clients decline it. It's not inexpensive.
Right.
But if you are going to drop 10 grand, 20 grand on a horse, what's another $300 to know that the horse doesn't have any drugs in that system? Because I tell my interns, believe nobody, especially in the horse industry.
Yeah, seriously.
Believe nobody. I don't know. We send it off to Arizona where it's a little cheaper than Cornell, but they do a really good job down that tox lab down there. And they can find long-term tranq too. So like for show horses, it's good to find flufenazine. But this, I'd be testing this horse for some bute.
Yeah.
And steroids. Poor prognosis, so can they return the horse? That would have been my recommendation.
Yeah, good question. I don't know,
yeah.
They were pretty bummed out, which is understandable.
I know this topic's not about it, but pre-purchase exams, they are expensive. But if you're spending a lot of money for a horse, or even, you know, if you're spending all your money and you don't have money for maintenance, quote-unquote maintenance, it's a bad word probably, but people call it for joint injections, but some of these horses need it.
Right.
If you don't have, you know, if you're tapped out at the high end of your budget, 10% of the horses, but you would find this and not buy this horse.
Right.
And you would pass on this horse. And I do know clients get frustrated when they've done 3 pre-purchase exams and we keep finding things wrong with the horse.
Right.
And then it really, you know, it just comes down to what your risk tolerance is, how much risk you're willing to take.
Right.
And this would have been a risky investment.
Yeah.
So anyways, you treated him. How did you treat him?
After a discussion about some of the options, the owners elected to try steroids just because felt like that might be probably a potent option for this horse since, you know, had such significant lameness and just kind of trying to get it through so that they can do some light riding. And
it's interesting, the middle carpal joint on the horse, or what the lay people call low carpal joint, the bottom carpal joint, right? Even though it's the middle for us, because anatomically there's 3, but clients see 2.
Right.
Barrel horses pound on this. Like, this is like a racehorse disease.
Yeah.
But these barrel horses, if they're fast enough, heavy enough and turn good enough, they will destroy their lower joints of their knee. It's not uncommon.
You and I were talking about that recently, about as a barrel horse.
Yeah, it's real. So that's an interesting case. What steroids did you put in there? Did you put triamcinolone, betamethasone, depo?
We ended up putting triamcinolone in.
Okay, that's fair. Mm-hmm. I would have chose... She picked triamcinolone because it was the best for the cartilage.
Yes, yeah. I think that was her...
That was her argument.
Her argument.
I would have chose depomedrol because the knee's already messed up.
Me too. I think that's fair.
Yeah. If the knee was clean, I would not put depomedrol. And we'll talk about that. That knee's trashed, so... That was a racehorse, they'd be... It either wouldn't make it to the racetrack, or they'd be putting it in the lowest claiming race possible. Yeah. So the horse doesn't come back to their farm. Yeah, that sucks for those people.
Yeah, it was a cute horse.
Maybe he'll be a good pasture pet. Hopefully they didn't pay a lot for him. Hopefully. We have joint fluid, which is around the joints, right? It's kind of like the lubricant, I guess, in between the, mm-hmm. the cartilage. Mm-hmm. So, like, where does the joint fluid, like, magically come from?
Yeah, so there's cells kind of in that lining of the joint, and those cells produce the components of the joint fluid.
Okay, so the cells in the joint. So not the cartilage, though, so the cells. So they're two separate things.
Right.
Okay.
They produce kind of the two primary things that are in joint fluid, which is hyaluronan or hyaluronic acid, mm-hmm. and then lubricin.
Okay.
And those things act to, you know, provide lubrication and kind of a barrier lubrication, like you said, to the surfaces of the joint, like the cartilage. And then they actually also act to regulate the composition of the synovial fluid or joint fluid by, they keep other molecules out.
Okay.
Just because they kind of sit along the lining, prevent larger molecules from getting into the synovial fluid.
Are there any bad molecules that want to get in there?
Yeah, you know, you wouldn't want like larger proteins and things like that in there. And certainly with inflammation, you know, you'll get white blood cells and things like that. But those can unfortunately fit through.
So this barrier, so kind of like motor oil for pistons maybe? Mm-hmm. Like it makes it go mm-hmm. up and down easier?
Yep.
It also, doesn't it have like some cushioning protect if it's like another viscous property?
Yeah, yes.
I don't understand physics a lot, but I would assume the gel in your sneakers, right? Like it kind of blunts the blow so the cartilage doesn't hit each other. Therapies people have thought up targeting synovial fluid. I mean, some people have come up with some good marketing. Lubricin mm-hmm. is a product.
Same name.
I wonder why. And hyaluronic, right? Hyalin, there's products called that. We have this fluid floating around. We want to make this fluid as healthy as possible, so we're probably going to target some therapies for that. The cartilage itself is pretty white cartilage, right? It's real pretty looking.
It's beautiful.
It is beautiful, unless there's issues with it. But what is cartilage made of?
The major component of cartilage is going to be collagen.
Okay.
But then kind of what would be kind of more important for us to focus on today would be the other component. It's about 30% of it is proteoglycan. So that's protein and glycosaminoglycans, which is just compounds that spread themselves out and attract water. It helps to cartilage a little bit more full and cushiony. It creates this pressure, almost like a tire pressure, to help protect the cartilage itself and make it more of like a shock absorber.
Glucosamines in a lot of these products that we're going to talk about. And I think a lot of people are like, ooh, glucosamine, I feed it, or glucosamine, I inject it, mm-hmm. and it magically gets to the joint. And I think we have some evidence it might or might not do that. So I guess I like your example. I was going to use a waterbed.
Yeah,
like,
that makes sense.
From the 80s, if anyone's ever been in a waterbed. Like, you don't want to sink all the way to the bottom.
No,
you want it to
be
somewhat stiff. I guess when the cartilage gets weaker, you sink further in the waterbed and you hit the ground?
Exactly. Yeah. If you're losing some of those gags, like, then your cartilage will get thinner.
And your waterbed's softer.
It's not going to be very protective for you.
Yeah. Do people have waterbeds anymore?
I don't know. When I was growing up, one of my best friends had one. I don't know how she slept on it.
I've slept on a waterbed once.
I think I would get seasick.
Yeah, seasick.
Yeah, I get car sick.
You get car sick? So. Good thing you're not an ambulatory vet. That would be really bad. Do you get car sick if you drive?
No.
Okay.
So if I drive, I'm okay. But one time when I was driving, I was an intern. I was driving the truck in a late night emergency. I had to pull over for the extern because she got
vomited.
Sick. Yeah.
We've only had, I've been here 8.5 years, we've only had one student that's vomited in the truck. She was sick. I think she was sick. Like, we went to the first call, and she was kind of pale.
Oh, no.
And I was like, you can sit down. On the way home, she's like, I had to vomit. And one of the interns grabbed a Dairy Queen cup.
Oh, God.
And she vomited in the Dairy Queen cup. Yeah.
That's horrible.
Pretty embarrassing for the student. Yeah. But if you get a vomit, you get a vomit.
Yeah.
As I get older, though, like, I can't ride roller coasters anymore.
Yeah.
Like, my inner ear just can't recover like I used to.
And then when you try to fall asleep, do you feel like you're still on the roller coaster?
That happens. Yeah. Yeah. I pop some on Doncitran so I don't get as sick, and that, because I love riding roller coasters, but yeah, it is. Getting older sucks.
It does.
it does. Yeah, my cartilage is degenerating as we speak.
Exactly. It's a real roller coaster when you have arthritis.
It is, yeah. We know arthritis is bad for both humans and horses, so we're going to aim our therapies at decreasing the amount of inflammation and pain. Why do we give these therapies?
Probably the biggest one, and probably the one that people are most looking for, is to decrease pain, right? We want these horses to not be lame so that they can perform.
Bill Belichick would say, do your job.
Do your job.
I tell the students that, too. They don't like that. I'm like, just do your job. And then I get written
up. Doesn't go over well.
Doesn't go over well. That's not my job. It is your job. Ah, this generation, let me tell you. So you want to decrease pain, anything
decrease
else?
Pain, that's the big one. And then obviously, ideally, we're preventing progression of disease. And I think that's an important thing to remember, is that we're really trying to prevent progression. None of these treatments that we're going to talk about is really going to cure necessarily arthritis. You know, once
Nothing.
It's started,
yeah.
We have what we have. And so we're going to try to slow that progression to increase the useful of the horse, and that you kind of prolong their useful life. We do this by using products that mimic some of the components of joint fluid and cartilage.
Because if we could cure arthritis, humans would be doing it.
Absolutely.
But
long before horses.
Long before horses, yeah. And humans can't cure it either, right? They just get knee replacements or
exactly.
hip replacements exactly. because there's so much cartilage degeneration. I don't think they make the metal strong enough for the horse's body yet.
Not yet.
Not yet. Dogs get hips all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They only weigh like 100 pounds.
Yeah.
So.
Mini horse,
yeah. Would you just go get the Great Dane implants?
Yeah.
Yeah. You could probably get a human implant, right? It'd be probably really expensive, but
expensive.
It'd probably work.
Yeah.
Arthritis claim to do things.
Mm-hmm.
So what do they claim to do?
Some of them claim to prevent arthritis.
Okay, so a prevention.
Some of them claim to slow the progression. And some of them actually claim to reverse
themselves. Reverse arthritis? That seems a little questionable.
Seems questionable.
Okay.
And, you know, not everything is as it seems, just like on the internet. Sometimes these products just don't have the science to back up some of these claims.
Or no science at all.
Or no science at all.
And anecdotal... So anecdotal reports by people, the plural of anecdotal is not data. It's not. You can have all the anecdotal reports you want.
That's funny.
It is not data. It's one of my favorite quotes from a doctor that I follow. So there's a lot of steroids, corticosteroids. So like in the case you had earlier, we talked kind of, we're bantering about different steroids. So like why do we use steroids? Like we've been using them since the 70s, right? They've been in there for a while.
Right. Steroids are going to be the most potent anti-inflammatories that we have. And like we talked about in the last episode, inflammation is kind of what kicks off all of this.
The tornado cytokines.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. So if we can decrease inflammation, that should help with pain and hopefully progression of...
It's kind of like resets the environment a little.
Exactly.
But sometimes steroids can be bad, right? People talk about steroids being bad?
Yes.
At times?
You know, there's certainly been studies that show when you use high concentrations of steroids and, you know, prolonged use of steroids, that it can actually be very detrimental to the cartilage and the environment of the joint, right? Because it's hindering any sort of normal immune system. It's going to slow the production of normal white blood cells and things like that, but it can also slow the progression of the production of some of those things like in the joint fluid, like hyaluronic acid and...
Just kind of knocks that out a little. Okay.
Yeah.
And I think when, like, long-term usage, most of that is, I think, like, racehorse data, right?
Mm-hmm.
When they would inject the racehorse every month before a race.
Right.
Like, I don't think if we inject our horses twice or three times a year...
Exactly.
That's not, quote-unquote, I wouldn't assume long-term use, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And there's been studies in people that, you know, just... you know, smaller doses, mm-hmm. less frequently in joints can actually be very beneficial to, you know, stopping the formation of osteoarthritis. Oh, yeah.
It's, people always ask, Doc, if I inject my horse's joints, am I going to have to keep doing it?
Right.
Do you get that question a lot?
Yeah, all the time.
And how do you answer it?
I just say, you know, kind of depends. Depends mm-hmm. on exactly what's going on in the joint. And also, I think sometimes if we stop the pain pathway initially and we can kind of build up strength in other areas, sometimes horses don't need it all the time,
mm-hmm.
right? But sometimes they do.
So I tell them, I say, slowing the inflammation down, so it's beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we're injecting the joint is because there's some beginning stages of arthritis. If I have to come back and inject this joint in 2 months, I maybe missed a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it could be something completely else and
right.
we didn't make the right diagnosis. Or, and then if we're doing it every 6 months or once a year, then that's because you're riding your horse. And that's why we should inject your horse's joint to make it comfortable.
For
so
sure.
If you don't want to inject its joints ever again, just turn it out. Like,
right.
stop
right.
riding your horse. It's because you are keep using the horse and it has beginning stages of arthritis is why we're injecting it. Not because we put a needle in the joint. And I think
right.
people see that, oh, I injected his joints, I have to keep doing it. Well, yeah, because the arthritis keeps progressing.
Right.
Not
exactly.
because we put a needle in there. That's how I used to explain it. Okay. And on the racetrack, you could see, back in the olden days, when I was in undergrad, you'd see some of these some of these horses would break down. We would always go to the pit and like do like a little necropsy on
mm-hmm.
them because I was a curious little undergrad.
Yes.
And you would cut the joints apart, and they were like the cartilage was yellow.
Yeah, just
like
trashed.
It was bad, and it had scoring in it, and it's probably because it got a lot of steroids over and over again with arthritis, like a combination that was not good. Now in racehorses, they can't really use steroids anymore. So what is the most common steroid do you like to put into a joint?
I know we were talking a little bit on the case.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few that people often use.
Okay.
I would say most commonly I'm using triamcinolone, like we used in that case, or dapirolizumab or methylprednisolone. And I'm typically using triamcinolone in sort of earlier stages
mm-hmm.
where there's not a lot of progression of osteoarthritis and in higher motion joints, just because some of the studies have shown that at lower doses, it has kind of fewer detrimental effects.
Yeah, isn't some studies show it's like chondroprotective, like they go that far?
Mm-hmm.
But some of those are done on like rabbit models.
Right.
Where they, and I think maybe a dog model, where they cut its cruciate ligament and make it run on a treadmill.
Yeah.
And then look at it underneath the microscope. That means the animal's dead. And
yeah.
and be like, oh yeah, look, the cartilage is great. Yeah, so triamcinolone, I'm a little more leery of triamcinolone just because of the lawsuits out there. For 18 milligrams, they say is not good,
right?
Because you could cause laminitis with it. No one's proven that.
Right.
We see in our studies here with dexamethasone high doses causing laminitis. So it's clearly steroids cause laminitis.
Sure.
Prednisolone acetate or dapirolizumab.
It's more anecdotal, but it feels a little bit more potent than triamcinolone. Potentially.
I would agree. Yeah.
Potentially has more detrimental effects to the cartilage.
Yeah. Right. There's some studies that
yes.
show that explants causes chondronecrosis. Maybe. Right.
Right.
I don't know. Those aren't in the horse per se.
Right.
Those are high doses.
Exactly. So I think if we're using our principles of judicious use, reasonable doses, probably we're not going to be causing these detrimental effects.
So you're not going to put 200 milligrams of dapirolizumab into a joint?
Probably not.
That seems like a lot.
Seems high.
Yeah, maybe 40.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe 80 if I'm pushing it. But
yeah.
If you look at the retrospective studies out there and they survey practitioners, there's some crazy doses people are using.
Yes.
And you're like, wow, that seems kind of high. Betamethasone, Betavet. Do you use a lot of that?
Honestly, I don't. I have not used it very often, but I know that, you know, vets in the area use it, and
mm-hmm.
it's kind of supposed to be a little bit more long-acting, but certainly there have been studies that show that at higher doses it can be very detrimental to the joint.
Carlos, yeah. So I use a lot of betamethasone because of its kind of short-acting and long-acting.
Mm-hmm.
Keep the doses down. It seems like it's supposed to be a little safer.
Yeah.
So if you had multiple joints to inject on a horse, I can safely put in more steroids, lower doses into four joints rather than triamcinolone where I've run out of doses. There's like some of the original studies showed it had no effect on cartilage. Some show it does.
Right.
I think it's very kind of all over the place which study shows it can be good or bad. I've had good success with it, so I use it. It was off the market for a while, and now it's come back in an equine labeled product. Even better, because we used to have to use the human stuff, which was kind of off label, but now we have BetaVet. And then a lot of people add quote unquote acid to their joint injections. What is this acid? I mean, it's not chloric acid. That would be bad. We're not cleaning the joint. What is this hyaluronic acid that we use?
Yeah, so like we talked about earlier, hyaluronin or hyaluronic acid is a normal component of the joint fluid, glycosaminoglycan or a GAG. Mm-hmm. And so it can actually help replenish some of that fluid that's lost during the progression of osteoarthritis. And some studies have actually shown that it can, you know, getting that lubrication back in there and the kind of the properties that it has can actually encourage the cells to start producing it again.
The original knee models where they cause some joint chips and it's carpal joint, yes, and then jog them on a treadmill for a couple months and then look at the cartilage. And I think the HA in the joint was showed that it had somewhat effective, right?
Right.
The cartilage looked a little healthier depending how you stained it.
Yes.
And
yeah.
The horses, I don't know if the horses were less lame though.
That's the thing. I think it's probably more useful in conjunction with some of the other products.
Yeah. Because in humans, when they get knee injections with Synvisc, they go every 2 weeks for like 3 or 4 weeks in a row. That much HA is probably helpful to decrease the inflammation and like really rebuild it. But I'm leery to know that one dose is really that helpful.
Right.
I still use it in conjunction with steroids.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's that helpful, yeah, but
I know there have been studies in people that have showed that hyaluronic acid with corticosteroids has sort of a synergistic effect.
So. Yeah. And I used the Legend formula in the joint. Somewhat cautious of how good this product is. So like some of the products now are so expensive,
right,
that it's kind of cost prohibitive.
Yeah.
So I've switched to a little less molecular weight product, but it seems like the horses, I'm getting the same clinical response, but I don't know. That's what I have done. What HA product do you put into a joint?
Most commonly I'm doing Hyvis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just very expensive.
It is expensive.
Twice as much as Legend.
Right.
So, more molecular weight. Because there's that one study, too, where they looked at, it was retrospective, right? They looked at steroids and then steroids plus HA, and the people didn't report a difference. And now you wonder and I thought they said that if I remember that study correctly, that the people reported a better outcome with steroids alone.
Right.
You just have to wonder, though, if like their bill was less.
Yeah, if they're happier.
They're like happier. Like, oh, I only paid 80 versus 150. Yeah, it's great, doc. So retrospective studies when you call people is probably not the best study, but at least the clients, I mean, I guess that's the end result, right? For us, is the client's happy, the horse is sound. So I don't know. That study, I always think about that study when I'm putting HA into a joint.
Yes.
Like, oh, I don't know. We do it. I think it's probably beneficial scientifically,
yeah,
but I just wonder, like,
yeah. And I think there is a recent study in horses too where they looked at the same type of, mm-hmm, thing and found that, you know, just steroid alone was
just as good.
So
yeah, so maybe we should stop
it. An option.
And I think if we're gonna, for me, I think we're probably not gonna get to it today, the biologicals, right? So if I'm spending this much money spending the client's money on HA and steroids, mm-hmm, and I can put a biological PRP or APS in there for similar price, maybe $50, $60 more, depending on where you go.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's way better.
Right. I think we're kind of moving that direction.
I think the ship, the Titanic of joint injections is turning. It's hit the iceberg, and we are trying to avoid more damage.
More sinking.
That's where I think I'm going. I've been talking about it more now that we have good machines to take in the field and good systems.
Right.
And like before, the early stuff was a little sketchy.
Right, but it's nice now that you can just do that in the field.
Do it in the field. I don't have to take them back. And with the Arthromed system, the single syringe system, double syringe system, super sterile. I love it.
So easy.
Talk about biologics next time. There's IV Legend too. I had some students. We gave some IV Legend the other day to a horse, and they never even heard of it before. So how does that work?
Yeah, so that's the same thing. It's a hyaluronic acid, but the nice thing is, you don't have to prep the joint, make it sterile. You can just do a simple IV injection. And, you know, maybe that's more useful if we're trying to treat multiple joints mm-hmm. that have issues, and that studies that mainly it acts as an anti-inflammatory when it's given that route, because they have seen that it does go to the joints. Because if you remember, the joint fluid is really a ultrafiltrate of the blood, does make it to the joint fluid, maybe acts more as an anti-inflammatory than actual lubricant. And
yeah, that. And those are cool studies. Like, they radio label it, right? And mm-hmm. they follow it.
Yes.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So it does go there. People ask me, like, the difference between Adequan, we'll talk about that next, and Legend. I usually, for Legend, I tell them, like, it's, like, more, I use it in a younger horse with a lot of inflammation, like synovitis, mm-hmm. like a young training horse, riding hard. I think that's where Legend may be more useful. I don't think it helps the cartilage that much.
No.
IV. The EI horses, they all pre-event on it because okay. they're allowed to use it. So okay. they can use it 24 hours out because they can't use bute or banamine.
Right.
So that's really good for them. And at the racetrack, the horses that were at the more expensive stables would get Legend more often. Sure. And they would also breeze on it, race on it. And that makes sense. Let's lay off some of the NSAIDs. If we can get anti-inflammatory effects on something more natural,
right.
we'll use Legend. But right. it costs more than a shot of bute.
It can be expensive.
Yeah, it's usually, I think, like $100 a dose.
Right.
And whereas a shot of bute's probably $30.
Right.
But I think the Legend's going to last longer. What about the old Adequan? That's been around for a while.
Adequan is also a glycosaminoglycan and has multiple formulas, like Legend, so mm-hmm. can be directly injected into the joint or given as an IM formula, which probably people are more familiar with. I think actually more of the studies have been done on the intra-articular formulation.
I love it in the joint.
Yeah. I think early on there were some issues where it was potentiating some infection within the joint, but now people are adding a little bit of antibiotic with it sometimes.
Yeah, I think I've talked to some older veterinarians and they wonder, because they've been around longer than me, so again, anecdotal, but like maybe the product wasn't as made as well, also right. like they had more, like through the reps, you know, talk to them right. that maybe their processing wasn't as good, because I still put antibiotics, what happened in the 80s, but I don't know if that is...
It really needs to happen.
If that really... Like, how were they scrubbing in 1987? Like, yeah. when this first happened? Like, were they wiping a little alcohol on it and calling it good? Like, we don't know.
Right.
For most of the studies in the joint, have you used it in the joint much?
Not very often, actually, but I know, you know, going to some of the continuing education things that people... You know, a lot of surgeons actually are using it a fair
yeah.
bit. And seem to really
post-surgical
like it,
so. Or mm-hmm. during, like, or like follow-up surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it makes sense, right? You're putting glucosaminoglycans in the area. Maybe the matrix of cartilage can pick it up. Is that what the theory is?
Right, right.
And kind of plump that cartilage back up.
Exactly. It's made one of those major components of the cartilage itself.
Yeah.
And fun fact, it's made from cow tracheas.
Bovine trachea.
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome.
So that's fun.
It is kind of cool. We eat a lot of cows in America, so we won't...
Might as well use
all the parts. Unless you're... Does your dog eat bovine trachea?
I don't know if she's ever had one.
Yeah. I won't give it to my dog, because they make a mess on the floor.
Yeah.
And they probably, like, choke on it and inhale it. And,
yeah, and then you'd end up here.
And then I end up here and paying a big bill for section anastomosis. So, yeah.
But the studies for the articular formula... have actually shown that it can potentially modify osteoarthritis.
Yeah, and decrease lameness.
Right, and that's one of the few things that has actually been shown to be able to do that.
So then everyone got scared of it, and then they're like, let's put it in the muscle.
Right.
And the data on that, I don't know, what do you think about the data on in the muscle?
Yeah, it's not as good, seemingly.
Yeah.
The studies just aren't as good on that, and, you know, I think the benefits are it's easy to administer,
mm-hmm.
But... maybe it's more of a preventative than an actual therapy.
Yeah, and I think that's how I kind of use it. There is the studies, like it does get to the joint, right? They
right,
where
exactly.
you label it, it goes to the joint, and it does all the magical things in the joint, but maybe doesn't. It looked like it didn't really, in some of the studies, help lameness per se, but it got there, and like the joint fluid was better. So
right.
kind of going back to what we were saying earlier, like healthier joint fluid is better, but the horse is still lame. So you're not going to fix a lame horse.
Exactly.
But you might prevent lameness. So if you were to, like, and I use it, the way I use it is I have people, traditionally, for whatever reason, people give it, like, once a month.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no data. to support once a month Adequan. So what I have them do is, so if you do the once a month, that's 12 doses. And the labeled dose is seven doses in a month. So I have them just buy 2 1-month treatments, and I'll do, okay, in the springtime, do it while you're starting your riding, and then like in the fall when you're like getting ready to, you know, really compete, it's, you know, points season, stuff like that, give another series of it and try to help the horse that way. So that's how I use it. I think I tell the clients, like, it might extend the time of joint injections, maybe.
Yeah that's what I was gonna say. Maybe more useful in conjunction with
that's how I use it. Like, it, but it's, you know, your bill is getting up there. If you're trying to, you might not have to inject the horse's joint as much, so you save a little money that way. You are treating, like Legend, you're treating all the joints at once.
Exactly.
Tell you it's going to make the horse sound. Like, I see practitioners do that. Like, oh, lame horse, here's Adequan. And I'm like, oh, I don't, that's not how I practice. I don't know. I don't think it's going to make it sound.
Right.
I say, here's some NSAIDs, joint injections, and Adequan. Like, I think it's a part of the multimodal tool of lameness. It's just not going to cure it all.
Right. For sure.
And I guess, talking to the students about it, they use a ton of it in dogs.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I had no idea, but like,
I
guess
putting my dog on
there? I think you might. There's a dog formula.
Oh man!
Yeah, so you can prevent arthritis in your dog.
She's a hunting dog. She's an athlete.
She's an athlete. She could use it. What kind of dog is she?
She's a black lab.
Black labs hunt.
A bird hunt.
She's a bird hunter. Okay, your husband does bird hunting, right?
Yeah.
Around here.
Yes.
What's he kind of waterfowl does he hunt?
Ducks.
Yeah.
Geese. Dove season is doves? Coming up.
Where do you shoot doves at in Grove City?
He planted a sunflower field.
Okay.
Which apparently attracts the doves. On our property, gearing up, that starts at the beginning of September.
And he has a blind set up and everything?
He does have a blind. Yeah. The dog's been practicing.
Okay.
Retrieving
the dove?
The fake doves that we have.
Okay. Will you eat the dove?
He will eat the dove.
What about you?
Yeah, I usually don't.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a lot of buckshot in it, right? Like, depends on what he's shooting it with.
And he basically makes these tiny little nuggets with their breast.
Little dove breast? I don't know.
It's a lot of work for a small amount.
But I think he's enjoying himself out there. So if there's anyone out there listening that has some extra cornfields, I think Dr. Rice's husband would love to shoot some birds off of it. Right? You need a little water and corn. The waterfowl fly in, and then... Yeah, we do have some clients that have some bird hunting. Most of our clients are deer hunters.
Deer hunters, he likes to do that too.
Yeah, there's a lot of deer hunting in Ohio. I wish they could hunt deer in my neighborhood. Yeah. I live in the city, and the deer eat my hostas my tomato plants.
I love hostas.
Yes, and everyone's like, oh, they're so cute. I'm like, if I could shoot you, I would. But they know they're safe. They're like in the, I guess you can't fire, you can't legally fire a gun in the city limits.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah. And I don't know if you can crossbow them. I think that would be bad if I crossbowed a deer in my front yard. As a veterinarian.
Yeah,
deer's running down the street, get hits by a car with a big bow in it.
Yeah.
But anyways, they're bastards. They know they can live. They live in the riverbed, and then they come up and eat everyone's garden.
That's a good life for them.
It is a good life. There's like an 8-pointer just sitting out there, just doing his stuff, yeah.
Gosh.
City deer are annoying, and they know it. Ooh, we have one more. We're getting close to our time. We have 4 or 5 more IVIM things. Do you want to talk about them now, or do you want to hit that up next time? We have Polyglycan, MAP5, Summit, and a bunch of oral stuff. Do you want to just kind of continue on? Because once we go into Polyglycan, MAP5, Summit, and the other stuff that's out there, we're leaving FDA approval land.
Exactly.
And we're getting into unregulated markets, shall we say. With some of them have studies and some of them don't.
Right.
So maybe we just leave that for the next time.
Yeah.
Because I think we do need to hit on the point of, like, we understand Adequan and Legend are expensive. And that's why there's unregulated products on the market. But getting FDA approval is not just like, you just don't turn in a piece of paper to the FDA.
Right.
Like, you do a lot of testing. You have really high factors. Maybe we need to talk about what FDA approval means before we dive into the unregulated markets.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Well, we'll just end it here. So next time we'll talk about those. So stay tuned for that. And there's a lot of this, found some good studies on oral supplements too. I'm just gonna like hint that they probably don't work that well.
Spoiler alert.
Save your money for injectable stuff. And then we'll talk about some biologics.
Yeah.
So it's gonna be a 3-part series. So, and maybe 4 if we keep finding more things. Maybe 4 because we have to talk about all the new stuff that's coming out. Thanks everyone for listening. Thank you, Dr. Ace, for spending early Friday morning with me.
Thank you.
And now we have to go back to work.
All right.
All right. Thanks.